What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about Microsoft. I guess Techtober has officially begun, Sherlyn, even though it feels
begun.
We've been doing Techtober since August, thanks to Samsung and Google
July,
and everybody.
Actually, but yes.
Yeah, it never freaking ends. But yeah, the wave of tech news, which we used to call Techtober, which is now just Tech Fall, I guess, the fall of our lives and our productivity, that is all happening. Microsoft announced that the Windows 11 2024 update is going out this week. But I honestly think Microsoft is way more interested in the AI capabilities that it's bringing to Copilot and also Copilot Plus systems. And I think that's kind of funny. I think, Sherlyn, you and I, as like Windows nerds and PC geeks, I think it's something worth exploring, because more so than even last year, this feels like a major shift for Microsoft. So that's our first topic. We'll talk about a couple other things, too, including HoloLens 2 and basically the entire HoloLens family dying. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always appreciated. Drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com and join us Thursday mornings, typically around 10:45 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for our live stream. If we have gadgets, we'll do, sometimes we'll show them off. We'll do Q&As. It's a fun time. Join us. Sherlyn, I'm sorry that I basically threw these giant stories at you ahead of the big news announcement this week. A lot of big stuff happening from Microsoft. Windows 11 2024 update, but also new features coming to Copilot Plus AI PCs, including like more information about privacy and recall, new features for the Copilot AI assistant. How did you notice something odd about these stories as I sent them to you, Sherlyn?
Beyond, it seemed like Microsoft might have given you the information incredibly close to the deadline.
Well, there's that. There's that. At least we got a heads up. But something that I don't know if you've noticed, because I think you had access to these docs too. The news was essentially, hey, this update is coming. Everybody get ready for it. We love Windows. We love Windows updates. And then the entire document was like, oh, by the way, Copilot Plus AI PCs. That's all we care about. So I got this document that was just like all new features. And then like one little paragraph at the end. Oh, by the way, Windows 11 update. You get HDR backgrounds. You get all this stuff. Like literally 10 sentences. But the entire like presentation from Microsoft is like, we love Copilot Plus AI PC systems. Did that feel weird to you?
I mean, I know that there was this, the main post that you filed was like at the end where you said, oh, by the way, there are these Windows 11 updates as well coming. And I think it didn't feel weird to me, I guess, because I was like, yeah, of course, they're all in on Copilot and everything is about AI. And maybe that's why. Maybe I'm so
You're just
over-
so used to it.
Right, the incremental cadence of like every platform update being like little things, even though like, you know, before 10, we had a big significant jump to 10, and then 10 to 11 just felt kind of minor because it was built for like better ARM-based performance, and then like now AI seems to be the mad rush here. So I agree with you, it is weird, but it took you pointing it out for me to realize or feel it, you know?
I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, typically when we talk about Windows updates, especially the annual cadences, like, they're not huge things. And even Windows 11 itself felt like a weird half-step update where the most compelling thing was like, hey, we put the taskbar in the middle of your screen rather than the side of your screen. That was the only thing people were talking about. I think, yeah, Microsoft is aware that the thing that could be more exciting now to people is Copilot Plus, first of all. And I think that's also key. I think more so than the Copilot AI Assistant, which is going to be in, you know, pretty much most Windows 11 machines. The Copilot Plus stuff, that is for the newer systems, basically released this year. So stuff like with the new Snapdragon processors. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I mean, the thing you're pointing out is exactly the thing that like got me questioning while I was reading your pieces, because it wasn't about the Windows 11 updates. It was more, you clearly have a distinction between Copilot and Copilot Plus. And I was like, where? And then I had to like, I sussed it out for myself eventually, but I was like, oh, so there is Copilot versus Copilot Plus. And there's a bit of a difference here, right?
Like, there's a total. Yeah. So when I covered, I went to Microsoft's campus in May, right? Ahead of WWDC and everything. That's when they announced the Copilot Plus PC initiative. And that was these like systems that had like a certain level of quality, right? So they launched with the new Qualcomm Snapdragon X-Elite and X-Pro chips. But basically, there was a minimum standard of 16 gigabytes of RAM, right? 40 TOPS NPU, so really powerful NPU for AI work. So it could do a lot of stuff locally rather than sending AI stuff to the cloud. Decent amount of hard drive space too. But that's the thing. It's like a certain level of computing quality. And that's the sort of thing Microsoft had to basically launch as an initiative with Qualcomm, AMD, Intel, everybody. Whereas when Apple did their big push for ARM-based and new chips and everything, they could just be like, well, here's our new thing. We did it all. We did all the work, and developers just have to catch up with us. So the Copilot Plus features are things like recall, but also new things that they talked about. There's something called Click to Do, which if you hold down the Windows button and right-click, there will be contextual things you could be doing within that drop-down menu. So if you're in the Photos app, I believe you can have it like just blur the background. Just like remove this object if you click on an object. So that's kind of useful. We're kind of getting a sense of what Microsoft wants to do with like these new NPU powered features. In the Photos app, you can also super resolution photos, which is something you could do in like Adobe stuff and Lightroom and other apps. Pixelmator does that on the Mac too. But that's kind of cool. If you have a lower resolution photo and the AI basically interpolates a lot of stuff in that image to give you a bigger file that also looks pretty sharp. I've used that in Pixelmator. It's pretty good. Just a couple improvements down the way. The recall stuff is interesting too, because Microsoft also basically held a call last week to be like, hey, recall privacy. This is actually very important to us, and we're going to be very clear about this. And this follows the whole debacle after the recall launch or the recall announcement, where everybody was like, there are gaping security holes here. Security researchers found things like where if you were an administrator, or actually, no, if you were able to hack into a computer, even without admin access, you could get access to the recall database, which is the screenshot of everything it's recording that you're doing on your system. So Microsoft had to delay that feature by several months, didn't even release it to testers to really lock that down. So the whole, like, it sounds better now. It sounds like they're encrypting the entire database. Recall itself is running in what they're calling, a VBS enclave. So sort of not even just like an encrypted thing, but like a virtual package of like where the program is to. So hackers can't like directly access it. Windows Hello Biometrics is necessary by default. And also, the feature is not turned on by default. You have to turn it on. And these all came from complaints from everybody. I also asked Microsoft specifically, so what did you learn from this whole mistake? Like this whole situation, which is they announced recall and they were like, this is one of the coolest things you can ever do. You can remember anything you've ever done on your computer, was completely mired in controversy. So I sent a question to Pavan Devaluri, which is the head of Windows. He's the head of Windows. He knows. We had an interview with him on this podcast months ago. He knows our complaints and our criticisms of Surface and Windows and everything. And he basically said that they realize now that users want to have extra confidence with anything involving like their sensitive data, or especially AI things that are recording all their data. And also AI involves a rethinking of how Microsoft and other companies think about security on a Windows system, right? Typically, if you have an administrator account on a Windows computer, the thinking is you could just go in and do anything, right? You could do anything on any other accounts. You are an administrator of that PC. You have really, like, basically broad privileges. But now if you're using these AI features, which are sucking in a lot of data and a lot more data than Windows PCs used to, maybe there's a good excuse for not giving the administrator full access to that, you know, to whatever that database is. So there's just things that they're thinking of that they didn't think of before. And that's a shame, but they're saying like that, basically this whole fiasco they're taking into consideration. I don't quite know if I trust them yet, but how do you feel about their turnaround on this, Sherlyn?
I think it took quite long.
Yeah.
I realize it's more than just allow people to opt in. There's the holes they had to patch, the access to admin versus like user. Yeah.
Encrypting everything is key.
And encryption. Yeah. It still felt like it took a little long, but I mean, it just goes to show how little Microsoft had any forethought, right, about this sort of privacy concern, that like it took public backlash to be like, ah, crap. And that like they had to, it felt like a ground up attempt to fix all these issues. And it doesn't bode well for me for any of their future sort of features based around your information. Like, I think they are, I tend to think of Microsoft as the most engineer brain of the top three, like, AI companies out there. They're very engineer brain. They're very like, oh yeah, this is convenient. Oh, it works. Let's ship it. They don't think about, what about all these other things? What about people who are using your product that are not engineer brain, that are going to like break it in some consumer way, right? So I think it took a while, but I'm glad they're at least considering, and I hope it's a lesson to like be considering these things ahead of time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. They're also like, let me see here. I like the security things. Revamped Copilot apps are getting some interesting features too. And I think this is all kind of interconnected. So they basically announced this whole new strategy called Copilot Labs, where they're going to talk about, where they're going to let people play with new features ahead of time. Let me see here. Copilot Vision is one of those. And this is a weird thing. This is like literally the thing we're worried about. It's going to basically see everything you're doing in your web browser, Shilin, and be able to basically give you tips on it. It's basically involving constant eyes on what you're seeing. That's a lab feature. And also Think Deeper, which is the ability to just give it a task and have it process a little longer to maybe get you some more helpful advice. These are all Copilot Labs features. These are like extra experimental if you think about like the old Google Labs stuff. And right now, only people paying for Copilot Pro subscriptions, so those are the $20 a month thing, only those folks can test it for now. I think at the very least, Microsoft is being very careful about how it's rolling this stuff out. It is showing it to people, but also a very small audience, and taking that feedback before it rolls out broadly. And the thing about Recall, they were just like, hey, here it is. Look, everybody, this is so cool. We're capturing everything you're doing on your computer. And they were more excited about it than I think they realized other people would be, because they didn't realize how little people trusted Microsoft, right?
Yeah. I think the conundrum of like having to pay for access to some of these extra features ahead of time is both like a joy and a risk that you're taking. And I guess we talk about this early adopter mindset a lot on the podcast, which is, yeah, you pay a premium to get to access things like prototypes, right? And these features in the labs are basically prototypes. But then you're also risking exposing yourself to a lot of potential like vulnerabilities, I guess. I don't think the word is exploits. I don't think the word is like bad. Like, it's not bad. It's just like you have to be aware.
Vulnerabilities is the word. Yeah, is the word.
Yeah. And you know, I guess cool, pay for that. But at the same time, these are people who are paying, therefore early adopters, probably already much more on top of their security and knowing the risk they take. It's just like Microsoft selling it to people who are paying, meaning they're selling people to people who are fans, who are less likely to question, is you know, curious, in my opinion.
I think it makes sense, just them being careful. And also, like, not too long after the Sherlin, we both went to Apple's campus and they announced Apple Intelligence. And it seemed like even Apple Intelligence was launched with the awareness of everything that went wrong with Recall, right? Like, even Apple and other companies are kind of learning from all this. It's a learning experience for everybody, but the people going first usually take the first hit. So in this case, it was Microsoft. It's often OpenAI. We saw Google Bard, you know, stumble right out of the gate too. And Apple at least is able to like sit back and just like watch and see how it can make things more useful. Speaking of like, so this is the Copilot app itself, Copilot on the web, Copilot's mobile app. There are some new features coming there too. Copilot Voice, which gives it a more personable assistant-like voice. So you can actually like have a back and forth conversation with it. That's kind of cool. I think that just makes it feel more useful to a lot of people. Copilot Vision, we talked about. They're going to do this thing called Copilot Daily, which that voice will also give you like a daily rundown of news and also things you may have scheduled or on your calendar. They want you to think of Copilot as like this thing that you can basically always turn to. It feels like Copilot is your new computing interface in a way. And that's also probably why they're a little more excited about it rather than a Windows update. Even though the Windows update is pretty big, according to Microsoft, it is a full OS reconstruction. So it is not just like a minor step up. It is like a full reinstallation and a full like re-architecture of Windows. Maybe following along the lines of what they did for the ARM stuff, back around the Copilot Plus launch, that version of Windows that went out with the ARM systems is very, very different. They had to rebuild Windows a lot to deal with ARM. So I feel like we're going to see more of that, basically on the Intel and AMD side. Any questions, Sherlyn? Like, this is, I see the chat is talking about this too. This is just kind of wild to me, because last year we went to the Microsoft event and it ended up being a surprise event about AI and we were all very confused. How do you feel about like their standing now around AI and Windows and everything?
Yeah, I think you're pointing to the fact that Simon B in the chat asked who is leading in AI, Windows, OpenAI, or Google for the consumers. And I mean, the rest of
Windows
this
is OpenAI at this point.
Yes.
Yeah,
the rest of this basically. Episode, I think, talks sort of about that, right? We're getting to some Amazon news later in this episode that was announced this week as well. But what we're seeing, and to your point, Devendra, compared to this time last year, or like last year in April or February, I forget. It was Bing AI. It was like the first time we had to like contend with like consumer facing versions of these features. But now here we are, a year and a half after the fact, and every company has pushed out their own version of writing tools, summaries, basically ChatGPT. And then we've got other companies doing their own implementations, you know, Copilot. We've got Google stuffing AI into literally anything it makes. We've got Apple with the redesigned Siri, which is still in classic Apple style, not actually here yet, right? Apple Intelligence, slow to the party. And Amazon, we'll see in a bit, gave us kind of a teaser at what AI on its own devices will look like. And it's much more of the same. But here's what you said got me to thinking, right? You said that it's the new interaction mode is the new interface, right? Well, how people are going to interface. I think I saw this trend when TikTok started becoming more of a thing, like short form videos right. started becoming more of a thing. And I was like skeptical of it ever really taking off. And yet you see that generations, like for example, that story from The Verge a while ago where kids don't even use directories anymore. They just search in their file explorer for the file they're looking for. I was like, oh crap, I guess, yeah, you don't need to organize
your stuff
anymore.
How files work, yeah.
I did. And I thought that was the way, and these things are changing. I think we're at the start of maybe Gen Alpha, whenever they get their first laptop, whenever they start using these Google services, are going to be so used to AI there that they'll use it in a way that we never thought, you know? And it's disappointing to me because I think it's even more critical thinking or kind of offloading to a computer as opposed to having our own brain process. But I could also see human beings finding new, unique, creative ways to interact with AI. So I don't know. It's weird, you know?
It is weird. I'm still unsold on the idea of like the AI stuff taking over everything. Like, I think at the end of last year, I wrote like Microsoft is really all in on Copilot AI, but doesn't really have a vision for what it is going to be. Now we're kind of seeing more of that. But also at the same time, like the basic Copilot search is not super useful to me. I would rather search the internet and get actual results from and go look at those results rather than have this machine feed information back to me and me not it playing a game of telephone and us not knowing if that information is actually accurate. And then I have to go back and check that. Meanwhile, the actual Bing search is still as useless as ever, which is funny to me. Like I use Edge a lot because I use different browsers for work and personal stuff. So I sometimes stumble into Bing search and it's still like, man, I wrote this article about this thing. It is at Engadget.com. And Bing just doesn't know it exists. I can like put almost the full title of the whole thing there and Bing can't find it. And
So disclosure, our parent company is Yahoo, which is owned by Apollo,
sure,
right? And
sure,
even on Yahoo.com.
Come on. Yeah.
Yahoo. No, I've used Yahoo because I was forced to because of my corporate machines default to Yahoo as the search engine, sadly. Even Yahoo is like, I'll be like Engadget iPhone review or something. And the first result is not Engadget Yahoo iPhone review. It's something else. And I'm like, what? Thankfully, because we know the people at Yahoo, we can be like, what is going on? This search is bonked. And then they're like, oh, let's fix it. So they can fix it. To your point, though, like Bing AI, Bing search is pretty useless still. I think we're going to get to this later in the episode, too. But I think Google search is also getting worse and worse. I've seen this discourse online for a very long time, right? Yeah, with the ads placements up top, with the shopping modules up top, with the top stories and the discover boxes up top. It used to be helpful. Now it's just getting the actual results further down the page, the things that I actually want to do. I don't care what Google wants to put in front of my eyes. I want to go and look into the results myself. Maybe because I was born in the 80s, but like,
this is why like, I am not sold, Trillin, on this AI driven future, because like, Google is forcing it at us. Microsoft is. The Google search right now, you will see generative AI stuff at the top usually, then sponsored topics and other ads and stuff, maybe Google Shopping. And then towards the bottom, you get to the results you want. So all these things are making our computing experiences worse. And I wonder, like, it's high time for some sort of user revolt on this stuff. Like, we took one look at Recall and we were like, no, thank you. Not like this. And Microsoft had to like scramble back into its cave and fix it. Society took one look at Google Glass and was like, no, thank you. That's not going to fly right now. We are just not ready for this. But also, there are so many problems with this tech. I do think we're going to see a lot more pushback now, personally.
I will say, to be contrarian, I will point out that in our chat, Lee Woods says they use Gemini Advanced several times a day just to summarize articles. You're hoping that they figure out a way to integrate Gemini into the Chrome browser. Look, I think summarize could be one of the easiest, like the best things that AI can do if it's accurate and reliable. And I think for a lot of people who've been trying out the Apple Intelligence stuff on betas, they found notification summaries to be quite accurate and
super helpful. Yeah.
There are tools that are going to be helpful. We're just going to figure out and weed out, you know, the bad from the good. Yeah.
I mean, it's all about how we use this information. Like, yeah, notifications. You know what sucks right now in modern life, in modern computing life, is notifications.
Too many notifications.
Solve that problem for me. Thank you. Less of a problem is finding stuff on the internet, but also making it harder for me to find stuff on the internet because you want to sell me this service that I'm so glad you love Gemini, Google. That's cool. Nice. Good for you, Google. I would just like to use Google search. So
yes,
there is a point where it's getting in our way and these companies care more about it than we do. And then I think there are companies that are trying to be a little more thoughtful. Apple is doing some of that. Microsoft is getting there with some of the Copilot Plus AI features, but we shall see. I don't want to sound like an old man shouting at the clouds, but sometimes when things are dumb and things are stupid, I think you have to be like, the emperor has no clothes here. You know, last year at that event, Trillin, I distinctly remember talking to Microsoft executives and being like, how can you have this thing, which you know is not always accurate, is not always correct. How can it be the basis of like all these new interactions that are going to be a big part of Windows? And they're just like, this is a learning experience. I think people will understand if we make mistakes. It's not how computers should work, folks. Like, you don't want a calculator to have a learning experience as you're trying to, you know, calculate a critical figure for you. You want it to just like do the specific task. And even Microsoft was unaware of that. We shall see how all this goes. Kind of related to this, Trillin, we also saw the news that Microsoft is killing HoloLens 2.
Yeah.
And there's no plans for a follow-up device. It's going to be using, I think I heard that they may be going to Anduril's headsets. Like, they're going to be doing software for that for military uses or something. But essentially, HoloLens is dead, which is funny to see. After literally last week, Facebook was just like, this is the future of augmented reality computing. Here are our Orion glasses. We saw Snap's glasses.
Exactly.
We saw Vision Pro last year. It seems like finally this category is heating up.
Right.
And Microsoft's response is like, okay, no, thank you.
There's competition, we're out. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help. Remember the HoloLens guy, Alex Kipman, I believe was booted out of Microsoft for being kind of a dirtbag. Just like he was like a weird, sexist, horny guy who really liked his AR glasses. So that was the story going around. He just did not make that team a really good environment. So if you lose the guy who's like leading that technology, that's one thing. But also, if you have Facebook, if you have Meta, who's willing to spend tens of billions of dollars to really get ahead, and Apple, who has clearly thought harder about Vision Pro than I think Microsoft has about HoloLens when it comes to making a consumer product, it just seems like Microsoft was here early, but it can't compete. Like, this is such a pocket PC situation for Microsoft. They had some hardware. They had some ideas. This is a web TV moment. But ultimately, they just couldn't make it work. And that's a shame. I liked HoloLens too. Like, if they were willing to, I think there is space for Microsoft to play here. Did you ever try a HoloLens 2, or do you have feelings around this, Trillin?
I can't remember if the one I tried was an old one or the second. I believe it was the second gen. And it was like an event in Times Square. It was one of those art events. And they were really trying to sell the potential of HoloLens outside of industrial and workplaces. I mean, I remember when the first few demos of HoloLens were just so interesting, where you could use these hand gestures. You could like collaborate with teammates on this virtual diagram or whatever. And I gotta say, like, in the headset wars, right? I mean, everyone made their own. There was the Mirage, the Quest. I mean, the Quest, obviously, with Meta having bought them, became kind of the front runner right now, in my opinion, for more consumer-friendly devices. But HoloLens did stick around for a while there as something that people used in, like, factories or, like, more industrial places.
Yeah.
And commercial uses. And it definitely had, like, felt to me for a while that Microsoft won in that category, even if it was very niche. And like you said, the defense category is somewhere where they can probably make a lot of money out of. But it's sad to see that just as it's getting, you know, to a point where the race seems to be properly heating up, that like Microsoft's like, no, we're good, thanks. Like,
No, thank you. Yeah, it's a little, it seems like you guys are far ahead of us right now. So we're just tapping out. I did a demo. If you go back and read about, I think it was called Microsoft Mesh, which was their like virtual meeting software. And they sent me a HoloLens too. And I sat here in my office and I had a group call with Microsoft executives and like 10 other journalists. This. And it felt like we were all just sitting near each other, even though we were all at our own homes. It was like 2021, maybe. So pandemic was still like keeping people away from each other. And it felt good. It felt like it worked. It wasn't super clunky, but the hardware was just too expensive. And I don't think they wanted to do the work to like really make that cheaper. They also had the whole like, you know, Windows mixed reality stuff for them to try to get into VR. But that felt like a little too late because Oculus was doing stuff before, HTC Vive was doing stuff before. So Microsoft was too late to VR, too early for AR. And now everybody else is just like trekking ahead. For maybe in 10 years, we'll get like the true AR glasses that everybody's dreaming of. And honestly, I also feel like we as a society are not ready for those either. But yeah, just kind of sad to see. So RIP HoloLens. Maybe they look so cool is the thing. I kind of do want one when they're like $50 being thrown out in a couple of years. I would love a HoloLens just to put on my shelf. Just like I have a Microsoft Kin. I have both Microsoft Kin phones in a drawer somewhere.
I continue to hold on to Engadget's Google Glass. So I understand.
The aliens are going to find our drawers full of like old tech and be like, well, no other humans have these things. Why do these people, like, what is the story here? What happened here? Anyway, yeah, a shame for HoloLens, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Maybe they'll come up with Copilot Glass. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who knows? God.
They're going to work on integrations for everybody else. So that's the thing. Microsoft, rather than being the platform, being the hardware, they're going to try to work with everybody else's stuff. That's why we're seeing Xbox and Quest and everything right now. So yeah, just a shame to see. And let us know what you folks think. I mean, I feel like, maybe just because I'm a 90s PC kid who grew up on Windows, like I have an affinity for old Windows. I think about the way it works a lot. If you have thoughts about Microsoft's new trajectory, drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. All right, let's move on to some other news. We got some stuff from Amazon, and oh boy, is this... Sherlyn, we make fun of Amazon for being really boring when it comes to hardware, except for like their crazy random stuff. This is a nothing burger of a news hit. We got a new Fire HD 8 tablet, everybody. It's slightly faster. It has a better camera. It's still a Fire HD 8. I guess the crazy thing is it is available for $55 on sale if you go for the ads and everything. So that's pretty good. For a tablet with like just for you to like sit down and watch stuff, and it's faster than before. So there's that. But also, like, they want to do AI stuff with it. Okay. Of course, everybody wants to do AI summaries and whatnot. Is there anything special about these tablets, Rowan?
So to be clear, Amazon announced the Fire HD 8 and two variants, the HD 8 for kids. And I think like Pro is the other version. Anyway, alongside the launch of the Fire HD 8, it also announced some AI features coming with the HD 8, but will also be rolling out to compatible Kindle tablets that already have been in the market for a very long time. So I was most intrigued by that. I want to do clarify that the HD 8 normally will retail at like $99.99, so like $100. And right now it's on sale up until the end of Prime Day, which is about a week from today. I don't know if you've opened your Amazon app, you'll see the big ad, October 8th, October 9th, Prime Day. Yay. I guess we needed another one. And up until then, the HD 8 will cost, I think, closer to 50. I forget if it's 55, but like somewhere in that ballpark. Anyway, what did jump out at me when I saw the press release was, A, this is not the Amazon hardware event we've been waiting to happen in October, right? This is just a drop ahead of Prime Day. And B, the AI tools. So I was looking at it. I was like, first thing that came to my mind, I was like, have we heard of Amazon's like AI features like this before? Because it was like writing summer. It was summaries, yeah, writing tools and that sort of stuff. Yeah. I was like, oh, this might be our first look at Amazon's own AI for devices, right? We've heard about some of their chatbots. We've heard about, you know, its improvements coming to its voice-based assistant, which I will not say the name of right now. But like this for devices is basically rehashing what we've seen before, except for with an Amazon spin. So the only thing that stood out to me was that you can get the AI to generate new wallpapers for the tablet, which cool, I guess.
Sure.
The Alcatel Idol 4 could do that. Like, yeah. You know, there's so many Android's material, you, to quote a more recent example. So nothing super groundbreaking, but the fact that it's going to be available on a cheaper device, the fact that it's coming to a tablet. Just to recap, like last week, Samsung had the its FE event where it said it was bringing Galaxy AI to all, right? Samsung hammered home the point that with its new Galaxy Tab S10 series, that now you've got Galaxy AI on a phone, a tablet, and a watch. Like it's, you know, it's, quote, bringing its AI to all, I guess, form factors. And Tab S10 starts at, I want to say, $650, maybe $700. So it's, yes, it's coming to a different form factor, but it's not necessarily super accessible. And so now if you want to get a cheap little tablet for your kids for $50, you can get one that has AI. Or if your existing Fire tablet, I have a list of what's compatible. If you want to upgrade that software, you can also get access to Amazon's AI tools, which are basically like every other ChatGPT clone we've seen in the last year and a half. And that just brings me back to the point we were making earlier in this episode, that it's becoming more and more prevalent. We don't know how people are going to use it, but now that more people are going to be able to use it, and kids ostensibly using a lot of Fire HD tablets, we're going to start seeing people mass adopt these, I guess. I don't know. That's where I'm at with
Yeah. I mean, it's compelling because these are such cheap tablets. I don't know about the like base model. You're giving up a lot by staring at those Amazon ads, folks, but it's hard to deny the usefulness of a $55 8-inch tablet. The kid stuff is cool because they keep saying, first of all, there's ad-free content, there are parental controls. Amazon says that they will still replace those tablets if they break, which is like the number one nightmare for a parent. It's that tablets are just screen, like giant screens with glass, and they will be destroyed by your kids. The kids' version of the Fire HD puts them in like a nice protective case. They have this guarantee from Amazon, so you feel a little better about it. I still have not done this for my kids. Like I basically buy iPads on sale. I buy old iPads on sale, and that's really what we've used as a family. So my son is using an iPad from like 2017 with a cracked screen, but that's what he uses like in the car if he needs to watch a video or something. My daughter has a 10-inch, one of the more recent 10-inch iPads. She wants to play Minecraft. She wants to play like games from Apple Arcade, and you're very limited in what you get in a Fire tablet. These are slower machines. They have a limited library of games. They can't access all the apps that Android tablets can too, because the Google stuff is not included. So just be aware of what you're losing with a cheap tablet. That's all.
Yeah, and that's why they're good for, I guess, kids. But to DPro9's point in the chat, this is e-waste right out the gate.
Yeah,
thanks,
yeah,
Amazon.
kind of.
No, you're not wrong. I can't argue.
It's a digital catalog for buying stuff on Amazon, also for watching stuff on Amazon Prime. That's really what they want you to be doing. And then, oh, by the way, it can also do Netflix. It can also do these other things. But they just, they care about their own
stuff. I see the appeal of it being like a cheaper Kindle with a not great screen. And I can only imagine what a summary AI tool on a Kindle book might do. Like, it's not, I think, going to work with Kindle titles. But one day, Final Evolution, don't read books, just read these AI summaries of books.
The AIs can already summarize books. So, I don't know if you'll get it all within text, but they'll do it through the cloud or whatever. And then who needs to read? Who needs to really engage with content and wrestle with complex moral choices? Like, just let's smooth brain all the way. AI brain means no tough choices for any of us. And that's where we're going as a society. Love it. Love to see it.
I will point out that a person in our chat, I think it was, I've missed it, but you pointed out that you're doing your master's, Tom Rogers, or someone, that you're using the Kindle Scribe, and that's the tablet that Amazon makes that you can write on. Which, like, this week, we are also going to talk about a bit more about writing tablets. And I think for me, that's where Amazon's hardware is still intriguing. And to be clear, no new Kindle has yet been announced this year, season/whatever. So we could still be waiting to see stuff from Amazon. And I wonder what would happen if they decided to stuff AI into a Kindle. Like, I have no clue.
It's mainly the e-ink technology that keeps Kindles the price that they are. They occasionally go down, but those do not have super fast processors. Those are really basic devices. I would imagine they could easily get some cloud AI stuff. So like crowdsourced, hey, some interesting topics that these people have. Or also when you go on Amazon now, you get AI crowdsourced user reviews. And I could imagine that being a thing in the Kindle store when you're browsing around. Yeah,
I could see that. I could see also with the Kindle Scribe, like I said, being a writing or drawing tablet. Like, they could not only give you prompts for drawing, they could also start an outline for you, teach you calligraphy, or I used, when I was reviewing the Kindle Scribe originally, I used it a lot for Japanese hiragana practice, so handwriting practice for a different language. I could see if AI would just generate worksheets for me, that would be interesting. Hire me, Amazon. I will think of these ideas for you that would be actually useful.
I don't think you want to work at Amazon. Really.
No, I don't.
No, very few people want to work at Amazon. I want to point out thank you, Mark Dell, for this wonderful comment, because it also fits into a bunch of things. But he says somebody needs to make an AI pin that just listens to everything and makes every decision in your life. Perfect for those who are bad at decision making. It'll be the last decision you ever make. That is a Black Mirror episode just waiting to happen. That certainly is going to be a thing. Also, yeah, shout out to the Yorgos Lanthimos movie Kinds of Kindness, which is sort of about that too, which is sort of about the idea that humans, we kind of all just want to let go a little bit and let people make decisions for us and then be little subservient little slobs. So depending on your view of humanity, you don't even need AI for that. You just need a Dom to basically build your entire life. Let's move on to some other news. How about that? Did you see the Sonos stuff, Sherlyn?
I did not, but please explain to me. I mean, I saw it floating around, and I kind of have the TLDR, but I'd love to hear your details.
The TLDR is that Sonos released an app overhaul earlier this year. It was supposed to be a big redesign for them, and it was a disaster. It was buggy. It crashed a lot. I honestly had trouble connecting to my speakers properly. It lost features, including things like setting alarms that the original app did. Disaster. Literally, Sonos, your only job is to give us the software to send music to your speakers. That's all you have to do. And what came out is that basically Sonos is a company that's been sitting on a lot of technical debt over the last few years. So there's a lot of stuff. The old app was basically built on a lot of things, and there were things they never cleaned up. The kind of underlying technology is something they never cleaned up. As Sonos was racing ahead to launch this app, a lot of people inside the company were complaining about it and kind of raised the alarms, saying this is not up to snuff, we should not release this. And people were ignored. People were kind of bullied for even bringing up issues. So that's a great corporate environment that you want to see. And now Sonos is at the point where they're just fully apologizing and basically saying that they're going to do everything it can to fix this. So the quote here is, our priority since its release has been and continues to be fixing the app. There were missteps, and we first went deep to understand how we got here and then moved to convert those learnings into action. I love when anybody says learnings, by the way. Such wonderful corporate speak. The quote continues, we are committed to making changes to get us back to being the brand people love by offering the best audio system for the home and beyond. End quote. I believe the Sonos CEO, so they're saying they're going to do a lot of changes. They're going to do a lot more testing. And they're extending the manufacturer warranty for all home speaker products, including home theater gear and plug-in speakers. I saw the news that the CEO is also declining to take a bonus this year, which is like the least he could do. You're still going to get paid millions, tens of millions of dollars.
Exactly. Like, oh, rejecting this little bonus on top of my like multi-million dollar salary. Okay.
Yeah. Great. But at least it's more than most CEOs do. Often when a company screws up, either somebody gets fired, but rarely is somebody like, hey, like I'm just going to take a direct hit for this. So, hey, that's something good to see. I would love to know what your stories are with Sonos speakers at this point, folks. I still use them. But it's stuff for, like, sometimes I'm within Spotify, and I like to send audio from Spotify straight to Sonos. That's hit or miss these days. The Sonos app itself is still all over the place. I still like Sonos speakers because they sound so much better than a lot of them, and the actual networking, the actual synchronization stuff is great. But just kind of a mess. I feel like they should discount some of these things. Beware of the Arc, whatever the new headphones are, too. That was kind of the thing they were rebuilding the app for.
And Ace, the Sonos Ace?
The Ace headset, yeah. Those also don't seem like they're really worth buying at all, too. So check out our review of that whole thing. Sonos is just still keeping it real, I guess, trying to fix all these mistakes. You have something you want to mention from Google, Sherlyn.
Yeah, just a really quick bunch of news from Google. There was this is like a drive-by recap, really, because the stuff that I want to talk about apparently isn't happening yet. Gmail is getting better summaries, and Google is adding a happening soon tab to its Gmail service. I like that. I mean, like, sometimes Google has really improved Gmail. Like, I think Inbox was an app we all loved for a time and then they killed it. But the Inbox was really where they surfaced a lot of these good features. Like, oh, there's a pack, like you know, like notification summary.
You say we all about. Very, very broadly. But it was certainly
by we all, I mean the people app. Online at that time.
I remember Inbox being launched. I'm like, what the hell is this? This was like when Google had like 10 different video conferencing apps and couldn't decide on it either. So I was mainly confused by Inbox. But yes, those designs did come over to main email. Yeah,
I think there were some really interesting features that debuted on Inbox, and then finally when they did get integrated into Gmail and then, you know, cohesively bringing all of them into one app is the choice to make. I agree with that. I just think there are some nostalgia for Inbox I still see online sometimes. Anyway, I mean, I like when like Google can pull, like, for example, last 2 weekends ago or something like that, I was watching that James McAvoy movie that I cannot remember the title of anymore. Speak No Evil or something?
Yeah.
Okay. I bought the ticket on an iPhone and had a Pixel 9 Pro next to me. Both had their SIM cards in them. And the Pixel 9 Pro had the tickets just like the instant I hit pay, and it pulled up the tickets on Google Pay because Gmail was so good at parsing the receipt that I got in my inbox and just pulling that information. I mean, yeah, it's a little creepy, but it's also very convenient for me. Whereas like, you know, other features like track your packets, there's an event in this email, I will add it to your calendar. Like that sort of stuff is really helpful in Gmail. And honestly, I think it's not a bad thing. I don't know if there's a net loss overall in terms of security and privacy, but we'll see. So anyway, Google also updated its Chromebook Plus slate of products this week. Go to Engadget.com for all the details. Nate covered it for us. But yeah, I mean, as we continue to see all the big companies fight it out over AI, it's nice to, you know, I guess see what else is being put out there.
That's something. I mean, it's also, I guess we're still waiting for like, are we maybe waiting for like a Google hardware event again?
No, thank God. I hope to God, no. If they did, I would be very upset.
I mean, looking forward, we are waiting for possibly an iPad event / MacBook event from Apple. Something more from Amazon.
Exactly. We're still waiting on Amazon. Yeah.
It's a whole bunch of that. There was a cool story. Did you see this one, Trillin, about a pair of students put facial recognition technology onto Meta's smart glasses? basically to instantly dox strangers. They're not going to be releasing this code. This is more of like a project they did to prove what is possible in things that, basically are kind of trivial to add to something like smart glasses. Did you see the story?
I saw the headline, but what you're describing sounds a lot like that Black Mirror contact lens situation, right? Where you like scan people, face recognition, and immediately pull up their like profile info, their social network. And it's not just Black Mirror, right? There's a lot of science fiction movies have done that. But yeah, that's what it sounds like they're doing. I don't know if I'm mistaken.
So essentially, like it looks like it's going through the glasses, but also going straight to the information is going to a smartphone. We're actually seeing it too, so you're kind of getting more information there. I will say there is a certain, especially from a company like Meta, which I'm sure has looked at this stuff. Like we have all your friends. We know who your friends are. We have all these databases of faces and names, so we have that information too. I'm sure. Once Meta is ready to do like true AR stuff, this is going to be something that they do. I also think, and I think I learned this later in life, is that I'm probably a little face blind. I used to think I was just bad at like remembering people, but I personally think like, oh, I genuinely have a problem like deconstructing a face unless you're somebody with like really distinctive hair or something like a really distinctive face. Things just kind of blur together for me. So just professionally, I could see it being kind of useful, or socially, I guess. So I see like, the uses, but yeah.
Like that scene in Devil Wears Prada where like Anne Hathaway and Emily Blunt are instructing
who's
walking out to her. Yeah. That's your like nightmare.
Oh God. Which is which?
Yeah. But then like with the glasses, you never have to worry maybe. But like, again, AI has to be like reliable. What if it recognizes, what if AI is also face blind and it's like, this is the governor or of, I guess, I don't know, Minnesota.
I already know to distrust my brain when it comes to faces. So now it's just like, okay, you're just helping. Maybe I distrust you a little bit too, but you are probably better than me at some of this stuff.
However, to be clear, it's not as if Emily Blunt was all that reliable in the movie as well. Anita Anne Hathaway, the update pack to help her. So
that's a great movie.
I saw that in theaters.
It's a great movie. Anyway, this is a story from 404 Media. So yeah, check them out at 404media.co. Love their work and love that they picked this whole thing up. Also love to see like students doing this sort of work, because this is what you want to see people doing. Like not being like, I can't wait till I get a job at Google or Meta or wherever, but also taking this technology and like pushing it to its limits and like showing what is possible and what could be dangerous about it too. So this is super cool. Did you have any thoughts, Sherlyn? Because I know you went to talk about this before, but Reddit's policy changes to make site-wide protests nearly impossible. We saw this story float up too. Kind of interesting there. Maybe a little disappointing from Reddit. Yeah,
I am a chronic Reddit doom scroller.
I am as well. Yeah.
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 When I'm not playing Match Factory, I am trying to rot my brain by doom scrolling Reddit. And I know that Reddit has had a lot of issues recently too. That's got a lot of us up in arms. There was like that, you know, what is it called? Boycott. Thank you.
Yes.
There was a boycott last year or earlier this year. Time is a blur, but there was a boycott earlier because Reddit was being just awful. But now today, this week, I guess on Monday, it made it harder to site-wide protest, basically. It's changed its rules so that moderators of subreddits need admin approval to switch it from public to private. That's one of the rules that's being changed and is being interpreted as a way to kind of curb subreddits from protesting and you know, being able to do so all at once. Multiple subreddits cannot all go private at once without Reddit admin approval. It is very strange. It feels as if like this was related to the protests from last year, because a post on subreddit r mod news written by the VP of community said the ability to instantly change community type settings has been used to break the platform and violate our rules in the past, right? So it seems as if this could be one of the reasons.
I mean, Reddit, a site which is full of content that is created by the company Reddit, right? Fully editorialized content from Reddit. No, Reddit is a company that exists because people love to like just post their own stuff.
Yes.
You exist because of the users. So now they're afraid of the users, basically. This is what this is showing once again.
There's a lot of like Other issues with Reddit recently. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that the initial protest was in reaction to the API changes that forced third-party apps to shut down. That also led to a lot of accessibility problems. And then the company during those the boycott just went in and took complete control of like one of the big subreddits that had participated. And then also recently licensed its content to train AI models. So Reddit's been making a lot of missteps lately. This seems one of the more recent ones anyway. It won't, I don't think, stop people from protesting in creative ways. For me, my funny reaction to this is people will just keep posting more pictures of sexy John Oliver. That's it.
Flood the zone with sexy John Oliver. I've also started like doom scrolling Reddit, Sherlyn, because sometimes it's like, or Twitter is terrible, especially when like it gets like, I still see like random right wing ads on Twitter, but it's also that's where my friends are, so that's why I can never fully leave Twitter. Blue Sky is kind of up its own butt sometimes with some of those users. And Mastodon is fine, but it's just the tech nerds. Like, I don't have as, like, engaging conversations there. So sometimes you just want to, like, the internet as it was, somebody asking, am I the asshole?
Yep.
Like, that's...
Am I overreacting?
It's like, okay, that's addictive stuff. But it's all user-generated content, and that is the danger, Reddit, when you build your entire company on contributions from your users. So
just a quick note too, that I don't actually think a lot of the advice given on Reddit is good. Like some of them like default to run. And I'm like, what are you reading two paragraphs and deciding that this person's entire life is boiled down to one word? Like stop. But Reddit is also a very fun place. Like I enjoy a lot of the inside jokes. Some of them get a little overused and stale, but it is a very fun place.
It is a thing. And also we've talked about how Reddit has basically sort of like taken over parts of the internet where rather than Googling questions, often like people just search in Reddit to learn how to fix something. Often
when I'm
Googling things, like I end up going back to Reddit threads because that's what Google indexes. So
because Reddit, it's multiple people with different expertise going in and giving you the answer on something. And maybe one answer is wrong, but some other answer below is probably correct.
We should talk more about Reddit at some point.
Yeah. We really could. I love
Reddit.
We really
should. All right, let's move on to some stories from around Engadget. And speaking of writing on e-paper, Mr. Daniel Cooper wrote about the Remarkable Paper Pro. It's a color e-ink tablet that you can write on. It seems super cool. He scored it at 90. So that's pretty high. The only thing is this thing is super expensive. So I think that's the main problem here. But the actual tech, like color e-ink, is something I feel like we've been waiting for a long time. The price, I mean, here is $579 with a standard marker, $629 if you want the marker plus. And you can add a case for $89 and the leather one for $179. So this is a very expensive e-ink tablet. Are you compelled by this, Sherlyn?
That was the first thing I told Dan after I finished editing his review. I was like, I want to buy one of these and I might have to save up for it. $570. I am a Kindle Scribe user. I pick it up once a month to jot down my thoughts. Do I think once a month of Scribbles is worth $570 as a starting price? I don't know, but it is cool as hell. And it's one of the pitches and one of the reasons we gave it a high score is that it is a distraction-free writing tablet, right? It's like, again, like the e-ink tablets, like the Remarkable, like the Kindle Scribe, like, you know, books, I guess, is another competitor. You don't have that. It's not as easy to just go over to Reddit, right? In a minute, as it would be on a regular tablet. So that's appealing. I think Dan was a little nervous about giving such a high score because, you know, it's not a tablet. It's limited in functionality. But in its category, I think Dan firmly believes this is the best. And for me, it's like a 90 means it is the best in its category.
I can firmly also see Dan, lovely, funny British man, just really, really quaking in his boots about the scores. Like, oh, man, is this... Am I showing too much emotion here?
I'll tell you
is
the
this
other.
Is too effusive for me?
I will say he was wavering between 89 and 90. And I
know.
Like, look, the only difference here is that like we give it a different color award.
It's fine. Yeah. But I'm glad Dan likes it. I've looked at the Remarkable stuff for a long time. Does this one also require a subscription? Because that was like a sticking point for me before.
So Dan doesn't mention the subscription in his review, and that is a good point. He does mention that the software has been meticulously fine-tuned to make it easy to sync, which was my problem with the Kindle Scribe. I will point out that Amazon has done a lot of good hard work to improve. Some of it syncing over the year or months, years since I reviewed the Kindle Scribe, so that like you can now, you know, sync your notes across your Amazon app toting devices. But you can, it's editing them is still tricky. I don't know. It's not an easy space to be in, let's say.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So the subscription is required for cloud syncing. And honestly, that is like a requirement for me. If I have something like this, like I want to be able to access my digital notes anywhere. So
anywhere, exactly.
Put that into the price too. But I've been intrigued by the Remarkables for so long. And this one is just like the dream of color e-ink. We're almost there. It's super expensive, but it does exist. So that's super cool. Yeah, maybe we'll all get to like play with it at some point. Also want to shout out Mr. Team Stevens has written a test drive for us of the Polestar 3. They're a long-awaited SUV. They're sort of like, it's a compact SUV, but it's like a flagship one for Polestar. I'm sort of intrigued by this too, because Polestar is sort of like a sister brand to Volvo, and I'm into like what all the Volvos are right now. Tim also did the Volvo EX90 video for us a couple weeks ago or months ago. That's also worth checking out. But this one looks really cool. If you want a premium luxury electric, have you driven an electric car yet, Shalyn? Because I know you're in the process of learning how to drive.
Not an electric. I've driven plenty of gas cars. Electric feels...
I feel like we got to record that video of just you like having that experience of the instant torque. And it feels real different. Things can go bad really quickly with an electric car.
Yeah.
We shall see. We got to get Shalyn on video. That should be a video series at Engadget. Totally cool.
That might be, it can happen anytime.
All right, let's move on to what we're working on. I reviewed the Asus ZenBook S14, the new one with Intel's Lunar Lake AI chip. Really liked it. It's a nice laptop. I wish we had more access to the Copilot Plus features. That update is not fully out yet, so I can't test recall. I can't test all those things, but this is sort of Copilot ready. It is a nice piece of hardware. They're using like a weird ceramic metallic top too at the top of the lid, which I think feels good, looks unique, and yeah, just really dig it. So pretty solid, ultra portable. We're gonna have a whole slate of like really decent laptops coming soon, so looking forward to that. Anything you want to shout out, Shalyn?
We just continue to plan and for upcoming events and reviews. Not a lot of gadgets will be coming in. We just can't really talk about a lot of them yet. And then I'm hopeful that I'll be taking some time off in October.
So all right.
Maybe you might not hear me for a couple of episodes on the podcast.
Charlotte.
I know. It's always like every time I put requests for time off, it's always like maybe. Alternative request. Because the only reason, it's not that my team doesn't want me to go off, it's the tech companies that are like, surprise event. And there goes my, like I
they
could
all do
still
this,
take it off. But yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you have, Shalyn?
So mine's not so much a pop culture pick as a just like general life tip and okay. Not anything that should surprise anyone. So I've been spending a lot of time watching YouTube more than anything. So I think I sort of already talked about this the last time I was on that I canceled Hulu just because it was getting way too expensive. And I also already have Disney Plus. And then, you know, watching more YouTube, I paid for YouTube Premium. So that's something that, you know, is a piece of advice that everyone's been giving. YouTube Premium is actually a pretty good, solid thing to pay for.
You have so much stuff to watch, basically. Yeah,
exactly. There's a lot to watch by creators, but also even from like, you know, filmmakers that are Hollywood titles out there. There's like, I was watching Bring It On the other day, again, for the 300th time on YouTube. But, I don't really generally like to like recommend things that we cover. So I try to stay away. But we haven't really necessarily covered this. I just recently started a course on Coursera. It's I can't remember if it's the Harvard course or the Yale course, but one of the like Ivies, they have a course on psychology. So it's intro to psychology. So far, I'm really enjoying it. I think this program was designed very nicely. The modules are a mix of recommended readings on the internet, and they're all free, by the way, but also these like specially created videos by the academic institution itself and the lecturer who teaches the course at Yale. They've combined it with this voice, a transcript, as well as these animations that make it very digestible. So I really like that. And I think my tip isn't Coursera specifically, but it's more like lifelong learning. I think you're never too old to keep learning. And it's so much more information is available out there, whether it be YouTube or Coursera or any number of learning platforms. I have been finding it really fascinating to dive into those. So instead of, you know, when I'm not binge watching,
you're doing something constructive again, with your time. First of all, Sherlyn, exactly. Of course, I for you to relax, you give yourself schoolwork. You're literally assigning yourself homework. So this says a lot
about
you.
Look, when I'm not doom scrolling Reddit to learn about people or playing Match Factory, I am sitting on the toilet on Coursera.
You're doing fantasy schooling right now because you just miss the homework and the pressure and everything. It's great. But I agree. You never stop learning. I watch a lot of documentaries on YouTube. I've just been consuming stuff over Audible more now too. So I found nonfiction books work really well for me over Audible. So that's been a good way to digest a lot of that stuff. I'm glad you're digging this, Sherlyn. I'm glad it's been helpful for you. But yeah, I cannot get over. Of course, this is how Sherlyn is unwinding. She's just giving herself more work. It's
overachiever vibes, yes.
Overachiever vibes, totally. Speaking of overachievers, I feel like you should go to the theater, Sherlyn, and check out Megalopolis, which is the...
Yeah, I have been wanting to, yeah.
Because this movie is it is a spectacular disaster of a film, but it's also a very singular, weird type of thing. It's a Francis Ford Coppola movie that we've been waiting for decades, literally decades he's been talking about this. He has spent, I think, $120 million of his own money to make this thing happen. This is a movie about a man who's trying to build a magical utopian city because he thinks his country or New Rome, his city, is kind of falling apart like America today. And New Rome is also New York. And the imagery is all really blunt. The performances are all over the place. But it is kind of fun to watch just how wild it is. Adam Driver stars as essentially a Robert Moses stand-in, this architect who is destroying parts of the city to build his utopia, built with a new material he discovered, Chilin. It's called Megalon. It's a living building material. Isn't that something?
Wow.
This movie's just all over the place, tonally, performance-wise. Aubrey Plaza is in it as a character named Wow Platinum. She is a financial journalist / broadcaster, and she's also bringing her spunkiness to this. I enjoy the interesting people to cast. Less a fan of it, bringing in people like Shia LaBeouf, who I don't want to see on movie screens anymore because he's a piece of garbage. But the movie itself, you have Lawrence Fishburne monologuing, working as the assistant to Adam Driver. His voice just lends so much gravitas to this. It is a big, dumb thing that is
I love that.
It is a wild swing. It is a wild performance swing. I think for theater kids, I think maybe for you too, Sherlyn, I think you fit within the theater kid mold, but
I'm kind of a theater kid.
It is very much within that. It's a wild swing about society is crumbling and what can save it. Maybe one genius man, if we just follow him, maybe this could be it. At one point, Adam Driver does the to be or not to be soliloquy and just does the whole thing because he does that to prepare. It's a thing he does to get into his acting mode. And I think at one point, Francis Ford Coppola was like, yeah, we're just going to keep it in the movie. You're walking around the set. The to be or not to be has nothing to do with what is actually happening in the movie, but he liked it, so they kept it in. This movie's all over the place. It's not gonna, it's doing terribly in theaters. It may go away soon, but it sure is a spectacular thing to watch on a big screen. And yeah, talk about overachievers, Mr. Francis Ford Coppola, who, you know, was tasked to do The Godfather at the age of 29. He was a really young man when he started working on that movie. To make some of the best movies ever made and then to basically have a really weird late stage career where he is continually trying to reinvent cinema. This is his big dream project. It's a mess, but it is, it's not boring. You know, it is a really interesting thing to see. You can see clips of the performances. Just a thing I'll recommend, especially if you have time and you want to see a wildly ambitious thing. Something I do think you'll like, Sherlyn, because I know you've watched anime in the past and you're a fan. There's a new show that everybody's been waiting for. It's called Dandadan. It is premiering today, it's premiering today on Netflix and Crunchyroll. This show is like watching Fooly Cooly for the first time. It is just a big dose of wild anime energy. It is about two high school kids, a girl who believes in ghosts and doesn't believe in aliens, and a boy who believes in aliens and doesn't believe in ghosts. And I think I talked about this last week too, but I wanted to recommend it to you specifically, Sherlyn. wild anime. I'm gonna check out more episodes. The animation is fantastic. It's from Science Saru, but mainly for you, Sherlyn, because we did talk about this before. It is fantastic stuff. I also finished season 2 of Interview with the Vampire, which is also good stuff. Amazing stuff, and I'll talk more about that, and I'll try to convince Sherlyn to watch that series. The season 1 is on Netflix right now.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
Oh, yeah, I'm at Devendra on Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all over the place. I'm also talking about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you have any great ideas for what actually useful things AI can do, you can send them to me. I can take credit for them and pitch them to the big companies. I'm at Sherlyn Low on Twitter or X, CHERLYNNLOW. I am at Sherlynstagram on Threads. You can also email Sherlyn@Engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about this show at podcast@engadget.com or any questions really you have that you want us to answer. Leave us a review, please, on your podcast platform of choice and subscribe anywhere you get podcasts.